Going Linux, Episode 187, Computer America, Number 55. Welcome to the Going Linux Podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Whether you're new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, Computer America.
You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America show. It's the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. Computer America is heard around the world and coast to coast. And I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
And it is third Tuesday of the month, and that means tonight is our All Linux show. That's right. Everything you want to know about Linux and more, we're going to be talking about it for both hours. And, of course, we all know that the Linux operating system, that's what it is, it's an operating system. It continues to become more and more popular. It is yet another alternative to the Windows operating system and to the Mac OS X. It is the third operating system, and it's an important operating system, and we think that it's so important that we devote an entire Computer America show to the subject of Linux. We do that every third Tuesday of the month. So if you have a Linux question or a Linux point or something you want to make, tonight's the night for you to give us a call. Now joining us is our Computer America correspondent and Linux expert, Larry Bushy. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Larry, welcome into Computer America. How are you tonight?
Doing great. How are you guys?
Oh, we're just, you know, laughing and scratching.
Hey, Chikin. Okay, good. Good to be here. Yes, looking forward to another exciting episode of Linux on Computer America.
Absolutely, and looking forward. Now, what we do is that I always ask Larry to volunteer a topic. In other words, we're going to have a sort of a topic that we're going to be talking about in the first hour. So the topic that Larry has selected for tonight is something, this is a direct quote, it's called Step-by-Step Trying Linux. Step-by-Step Trying Linux, okay? So why don't you explain that a little bit? What do you mean by Step-by-Step Trying Linux? Is this like big toe in the water kind of thing?
Big toe in the water, not these little toes we've been putting in there. We've been talking about what is Linux on previous shows. We've talked about how to choose a distribution, what's the difference between the distributions. We've talked about what is a distribution. We can go into that again if we like. Mm-hmm. And how things are different with Linux. We've talked about how things are the same with Linux.
The Linux community, you know.
Yeah, all of those things. Mm-hmm. But now it's time to talk about how to give Linux a try. And we'll do our best to give a step-by-step. Although this is radio, I think we can do it, guys.
Okay, I'm encouraged. I'm okay.
So I had a little foray into this.
Uh-huh.
And you know, if we are going to give instructions, but there are, I'm sure we're going to talk about the tools, and you know, I won't say they're foolproof, but you know, it makes this whole process a lot easier. So I do have high hopes for our chances of explaining this whole process.
Yeah, it's actually pretty straightforward. Mm-hmm. And we're going to actually give you some links and some discussion around some of the things that you can do to try it without installing it. Without downloading anything even. And also, if you do want to install it side-by-side with your current operating system, we'll give you some ideas to how to do that. And we'll give you links to written instructions and, in some cases, even video instructions if you like. So there's plenty of help to be had, and we'll be talking about all of that before we're finished.
Okay. All right. So So now, it's time to talk about how to try Linux step by step. So what's the first step that you suggest that we take?
Well, there's actually a very nice demonstration of Linux online. Really? So you can go to a website, and it's not completely 100% functional. In fact, I don't think it's even 50% functional. But it does give you an idea of what Linux is like, at least one distribution of Linux. And before we go on, let's, for new listeners, describe what Linux is and what a distribution is, okay, so that we can at least define the terms as we go.
Right. But by the way, as we do this, Ben, in the show notes, are we going to include all these links here?
Do you even read the show notes?
I just saw the pretty picture.
They're already there.
Oh, I just saw
to the show notes, and they are gorgeous. Yes. And all of those links are there.
Okay, I saw the really.
Thank
cool,
you for the enthusiasm.
I saw the cool. I just saw the cool picture of the penguin. I thought that was really impressive.
Yeah, the penguin is a showstopper, but there are links underneath the penguin that lead to everything we're going to talk about.
Okay, good, excellent. All right,
the penguin is gorgeous too.
Yes.
Okay. So what is Linux? Linux is an operating system, as Craig, you mentioned at the outset of the show here. Mm-hmm. It is an alternative to Windows. It's an alternative to Mac. It's an alternative to Solaris or Unix or BSD or some of these others that maybe you haven't heard of if you haven't heard of Linux. But it is definitely an alternative to operating systems that you may be more familiar with.
Yeah, I would chance to take a wild guess that you haven't heard of Linux, you probably haven't heard of Solaris or any other ones that you've talked about.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
But if you have and you haven't heard of Linux, it is an alternative to those things as well. So Linux is a very different operating system in some ways, in that there are different versions of Linux. And I'm not talking about different versions like Windows started with, Windows whatever and went to Windows 3 point something then Windows 95. Those are all sequential Windows replacements for the previous version, right?
Right.
So Linux has different versions available that are current, modern, up-to-date versions simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And they're all distributed by different organizations. And those different versions are called distributions because they are distributed by different organizations.
Now, at first blush, if I was listening to this for the first time, I would say, well, that's confusing. I mean, you know, I know go to Windows and I have Windows 8 and that's it. You're telling me there's an operating system here, but there are all many different versions of that same operating system all up to date at the same time. I would think, well, wouldn't that get confusing? Which choose, or how would I know, or what do you do in that case?
Well, it is all about choice, and there are different versions for different purposes.
Ah.
So, for example, there's a version of Linux that runs on a phone, a cell phone.
Really?
It's called Android.
Oh, okay.
Maybe you're familiar with that.
Yes, I've heard of Android, yes.
Yes. There's a version of Linux that's made for musicians. There are a couple of versions, as a matter of fact.
What's
there's one called Dream Linux and another one called Ubuntu Studio.
What about the one for musicians? Would that be Musix?
Musix. Maybe.
I don't think so. That would be a great term for a Musix.
I think it would be.
Yeah, it would be. Hey, listen, we got to take a break. We're at our first, and we're going to continue on. Larry Bushy continues on both hours. It's all about Linux, step by step, trying Linux. That's what it's all about tonight. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Twenty-one minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show. It's our all Linux show tonight. Larry Bushy continues on with us, and we're just getting started with tonight's topic, which is step-by-step trying Linux. And we were just getting into the fact that there are, unlike Windows, which basically just has one version, and then they keep updating it. Mac OS X, there's they're on Mountain Lion now, but there's just still one current version. With Linux, you can have many current versions, right? All the same. I mean, all current, but they're, and these are called distributions of Linux, and they're different, and they differ in the fact that they tend to cater toward a specific audience. Like obviously, the Linux for your mobile phone is called Android, so that's it. But the actual Linux operating system, there are many of them out there that are specifically designed for specific applications, like a music version of Linux, and then there are also general versions of distributions of Linux too. But we're just starting to get into that. So why don't you continue on, Larry?
Right. So we talked before the break about the fact that there are versions of Linux that are specifically geared to musicians and music recording and even video recording and those kinds of things. And they have pre-installed a number of applications that would be useful for recording and editing audio and video and and all kinds of things. They come pre-installed with drum machine kits and all kinds of things that you could even you couldn't even think of unless you're a musician or somebody involved in audio recording. But to bring it back to what most people would be interested in, there are some specific versions of Linux that are particularly geared for new users of Linux, not necessarily new computer users, but computer users who are switching to Linux from something else and want something that maybe easier to use than some of the other versions of Linux, and easier to adopt because perhaps it's more familiar or it's got some features that kind of walk you through setups or walk you through some of the things you might not think of when you're switching from operating system to operating system. And then, of course, there are the enthusiasts or the what you might call professional Linux versions, those that would be used to run enterprise servers in companies or even internet servers. There would be those that would be for those people who want to tinker with stuff. They're not satisfied until it's broken, and then they want to fix it after that. You know, that sort of stuff.
The tinkerers, okay. All right.
But
can I say that it's always been my impression that Linux really first appealed to that category of user. In other words, someone who wanted to go in there and tinker and play with it and, you know, and kind of pull it apart. And it was more the tinkerers than the actual users. I mean, that's always been my impression of Linux. So that's sort of what,
well, it's certainly not the situation today.
No.
There are versions of Linux like Ubuntu and like Linux Mint that are specifically geared to people who want their operating system just to work. They don't want to tinker with it. But
that's
you're
right.
Absolutely right, Craig. When it was first developed, it was developed by and for its users, and primarily it still is developed by and for users. And, of course, those will be tinkerers. That's the kind of people who develop operating systems, after all.
That's it.
But the nice thing about Linux is the fact that it's developed by its users, and the people who are developing it do not have the profit motive as their underlying motive for developing an operating system because Linux is free.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Yeah, and the applications that you install in Linux for the most part are free. So they're not driven by the almighty buck. They are driven by making an operating system that does what they want it to do and give you the freedom of choice to choose how you want to use it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So if everything's so free, why do people develop it?
Because they want to use it. They want to make it better. They're the ones who are using it all day long, and they love it. They want to make it better. They're scratching their own itch, as they say.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So back to our topic at hand, step by step trying Linux. So let me lead you on a journey here. First of all, I'm going to send you to a website developed by a company called Canonical. They're the company behind a Linux distribution called Ubuntu.
Uh-huh.
Get used to these weird names, folks. If you're going to adopt Linux, they get worse. So actually, Ubuntu is a distribution of Linux. The name is an African name that implies community and people helping people. There's some very specific meaning to it. There are various meanings to it as well. But essentially, it embodies the sense of community. And of course, Linux is a community-developed and supported software.
Okay.
So Ubuntu is one of those Linux distributions. And if it will have a link in the show notes to those of you following along later in the recorded session. But if you're following along now, you can go to www.ubuntu, you spell that ubuntu.com, and then /tour, T-O-U-R.
Okay.
And when you get there, you will be welcomed with what looks like an Ubuntu screen running there in your browser. It's sort of a demo kind of version of Ubuntu, but you can get a sense of what it looks like. You can get a sense of how it works. And let's just take a quick little tour here. So when you first open it up, it comes up with a Welcome to Ubuntu Online tour, and you can take the guided tour or you can show yourself around. And if you are more fluent in Chinese than English, you can even switch the language to Chinese. So I'm going to stick with Linux in English because I don't know anything about Chinese, and it would just be easier for me that way. So I'm going to click the Show Yourself Around button, and now it looks like you're on an Ubuntu desktop. And if you look over on the left-hand side, you'll see several buttons arranged in a vertical row. The Ubuntu logo is the top one, and there's a familiar-looking trash can at the bottom, and if you hover over it, it's actually called a rubbish bin. That's primarily because Canonical's Ubuntu headquarters is over in Great Britain, in England, and so a lot of what you see here is English flavor of English, the true English.
So even if you do pick English, you're not going to know what half the words mean anyways.
There you go. So moving right along, you'll see some familiar icons there as well on the left-hand side. You'll see a file folder, yeah, and you might presume that's the file browser, which, of course, it is. You'll see the very familiar Firefox logo.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's your browser, of course. At the very bottom of the list on the demo, you'll see a mail icon for Thunderbird. If you're using Thunderbird or Firefox in Windows or on the Mac or on some other operating system, they work exactly the same way in Linux as they do in those other operating systems. It is the same software.
That is very, very cool. And this is a really nice setup demo where you can actually try this Linux and see what it looks like. But it's actually in your browser. Very nice demonstration. Listen, we got to take a break, and then we'll continue on with more of this demonstration. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. Larry Bushy continues on with us. It's an all-Linux show, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Computer America Show. We are talking all-Linux tonight, and we're just getting into this ubuntu.com/tour.
I've been playing.
And, what?
I've been playing with it during the break.
It's really cool.
Yeah. You can't. Larry is right. I mean, you can't do a. If you launch a Firefox web browser, you can actually. I went to ComputerAmerica.com and all work. That works.
That works. Yeah,
that works. But when you go to the Office Writer and then you try to typing something, it says, thanks for exploring.
Well, this is someone else's desktop. You're looking for someone else's private files. Shame on you.
No, I want to type a document and save it.
This is really great in showing people that even though Linux is developed by private companies and different people and even the community, it's great of showing them that operating systems like these, they aren't, some crazy thing that you're going to have to relearn how to use a computer if you switch over to Linux. Linux
exactly
is
right.
Very,
yeah,
very similar to what you use already and, a lot more similar than probably the new Windows 8 will be when it comes out this month.
Yeah, a lot more familiar, that's for sure. So let me show you around a little bit here, guys. I know you've been playing around on your own, but if you open the file browser, you'll see that it opens up much like I assume a Mac does to your home folder or something like that. Unlike what Windows does, it doesn't have a C drive or a D drive or so on. It just opens right up to a place where you can put everything. And, of course, you have folders in there like desktop and pictures and videos and music and downloads and so on. And if you open the pictures folder, you'll see a bunch of pictures there. And if you open one of those pictures, pick one, any one, it opens up in a little picture viewer called Shotwell. And Shotwell allows you to walk through your pictures and add a library and all those sorts of things. And if you want to get into a little video editing, take some Red Eye out and stuff like that, there are programs that you can install for that in Ubuntu and in Linux in general. And if you are even more creative and you do graphic design or something, there is a program called the GIMP that's available for Linux and Windows as well, and I think for the Mac. And it is... not exactly the same as, but it has the same kind of functionality that you would expect out of any image manipulation program like that. What's the one that's so popular?
There's Photoshop.
Photoshop, yeah, and then, it's much like that.
Yeah, and there's another one that competes with GIMP. I don't want to say ArtRage. There's another one that, you know, kind of in the same category. Yeah. In there. Tool Sci, something like that.
Mm.
I don't know if you ever heard that.
Anyway, no, yeah. I haven't actually.
Okay, well,
but the GIMP is really, really powerful. So now, if you still have that Shotwell window open, go ahead and close that, and you'll be back at the desktop there. Sure. With the folder open. Now you'll see on the left hand side, not the right hand side like a Windows PC would have, but on the left hand side, like might be more familiar with a Mac.
Yeah.
You'll see the red or orangish close button, and then a minimize button, and then a maximize button. Hit the maximize button.
Okay.
And you'll see that it jumps up full screen, like you would expect. And on the left-hand side, you still have the little docked icons and stuff like that. But you'll see, much like on the Mac, you have a panel across the top with a clock and some settings and volume and Bluetooth settings. And on the left-hand side, it says Pictures. That's because you're in the Pictures folder. But if you hover over Pictures in the very upper left on that panel, yeah, you'll see that the buttons are there, and when you move your mouse away, they vanish. So Ubuntu uses a lot of features like this kind of graphical feature to keep it very, very simple. Mm-hmm. So you can move this back to restore its original size and close it if you wish, or leave it open. I don't care. So there's something else I wanted to show you, and that's if you click on the Ubuntu icon, you'll see that it kind of does a visual overlay, nice, beautiful overlay, and it gives you a search box. And if you type something in that search box here, it's not going to be as full-featured and functional as it would be on a real installation of Ubuntu. But if you type something in there like, oh, I don't know, music. Music probably isn't a good one, but it did show you the music folder. But there's really no music installed there. So if we go to Pictures or Video, there's a video there.
Yeah, and that works.
Okay. Yeah, that works. You tried that out? Okay.
Yes, I did.
And if you type in instead welcome, all right, there is a, I don't see it there. Where did it go? Introduction? Was it? Yes, it's introduction. So there's an introduction. I'm spelling it wrong. Introduction to Ubuntu, which is a video that you can run, and it kind of is no sound to it, but it walks you through some of the nice features of Ubuntu. It talks about the fact that it's free. It's guaranteed to always be free. I don't think it mentions the fact that you have free upgrades for life as well. Did I say it was free?
Yeah.
and think about it. You're getting all of this functionality that you can see online here for free. When you're using this, which is really the Unity interface, you can see that that little search box is searching through the applications and the files and the folders on your computer or in the simulated desktop here. But in real life, it will also search for applications that maybe you haven't installed yet, and that are available in the software repositories for Ubuntu for free that you can download and install. So it's really a very full-featured desktop here. But with that little search bar open, you'll notice there are five icons in the bottom. Those are called lenses, and those lenses actually filter what you're searching for even further. So the first one I think his games and other sorts of things, I guess. I'm not, it doesn't show me what those lenses are when I hover over them, which I'm kind of used to. So you can select the next one is documents, and then there's music, and then there's videos. So you can see that these kind of act as a filter on what you're searching for and what applications are installed and what things are available in your desktop. So that search, that main menu, if you will, actually searches through your entire hard drive, including the software that's installed, the applications, the programs. Those are all three the same thing, obviously. The files, that's what I'm trying to think of, as well as what else is available to me for installation. So if you're looking for a photo editor, in the real installation, you could type photo editor, and if there wasn't one installed, it would find it in the repositories and give you a link right there on the search screen to install it right from there.
Now, what happens when you go into the little gear up at the top and, it's, and you select shut down?
I haven't tried it on the demo. Let's give it a try. Let's see.
It turns off your whole computer.
It says, you want to start the tour again?
No, it says, are you sure you want to close all programs and shut down the computer?
Yeah, well, that would be what it would say if this were a real Ubuntu installation. But, of course, when you shut down, it takes you to the Ubuntu tour page that we kind of started with. Yeah. And from there, of course, you can start the tour over again, or you can select one of the other links that's there. You can do a download of the software if you're interested in it. And let's just kind of take it from there, because we're talking about step-by-step. So if you were to choose Ubuntu, or you were to choose another Linux distribution like, the link that we have, the other link to a distribution that we have in the show notes is Linux Mint. And I've chosen Ubuntu and Mint for our examples because they are the most new Linux user friendly. And they are very, very easy to use, very friendly, and easy to discover how to use just trying them out.
It's a mint green page, too.
Yes, it is. In fact, that's the color that you can become familiar with when you first install Linux Mint. Of course, if you don't like green, you can change the colors.
Okay.
That's another advantage. Because it's made by people who like to tweak things, there's a lot of things you can tweak.
You can make it, you can make it look like a candy cane or something. Yeah, exactly.
But it's these two, Ubuntu and Linux Mint, are very, very easy to use. You don't have to be a Windows, Linux, or Mac expert, or even a computer expert to use these. If you just want to use your computer to browse the internet, check Facebook, check your email, and then close it up, you can do that very easily.
Do some word processing if you want to.
Oh, absolutely. Stuff, you can do lots of things. You can do anything on a Linux computer you can do on any other computer.
There you go.
Except run Windows programs. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that.
You have wine.
You can run Linux programs as
there
well
you
if you really want to.
You do, exactly. So they have something called Wine, right? Which will let you do that. All right. Well, we're up against another break already.
Yeah,
it is. Time is flying. But this is really interesting stuff and things that people need to know. Again, if you're not familiar with Linux, you only heard about it, that's what we're talking about. The third Tuesday of every month, we dedicate the entire show to the topic of Linux. Larry Bushy is our Linux expert and correspondent here. We'll continue on with him.
Hello, Computer America. This is your London Minute with Patricia Reichel. I have been giving a lot of thought to Windows 8 recently, trying to understand it, work with it. I have tried hard to love it. I've struggled. My first reaction to Windows 8 as a desktop operating system was, horrible. I could not find the control panel, and the elimination of a start button was like waking up in France. There was a newness, a romance, but I felt awkward, and I kept thinking of my fondness for Windows 7. Windows 8 offers a modern feel, as vibrant, some might say garish tiles run off the side of the screen. The operating system is touch-centric, not point-and-click centric. On a tablet, it may provide a buzz as you whiz about, dabbling in the apps. games such as Solitaire and Minesweeper are not pre-installed.
Oh.
You have to download the games at the online Windows Store.
Darn it.
My biggest problem with Windows 8, however, is you have to learn to love it, and that takes time. You have to forget about some of the Microsoft features and layout some of us have grown accustomed to for over 15 years. Microsoft, that is a big ask for consumers.
Mm-hmm.
Do follow me on Twitter at ComputerTweety. This is Patricia Reichel for Computer America.
I don't think Patricia likes Windows 8 very much.
I don't know. She said her first reaction was, you know, that terrified screen.
Yes.
But I didn't know that it didn't come with Minesweeper and the hearts and all the other little games that it normally comes with.
That's bloatware.
That's what turned me off.
How are you supposed to waste time with Solitaire?
Right. I don't know. Right, even yeah. Windows games. Forget it, you know.
Oh, well. Hi, Linux.
Okay, well, you know, and we were talking about, you see, she has that nice British accent that gives her more credibility. Yes, exactly.
So, yeah, so we all now know that Windows 8, you shouldn't even bother. Just switch to Linux now.
Okay, well, there you go.
So I know we're almost out of time here for this particular hour.
Yeah.
So let me just say that if you do want to give Linux a try, we've given you a little bit of a guided tour step by step. We also have instructions on the Going Linux website on how to burn a CD with Linux on it and how to install it from there.
Use a match?
Use a match. You can. That's one way to do it.
Okay. Yeah, it's
amazing. Not very productive.
Now, all these terms, you know, that have their basis in, you know, meaning something else, and they kind of made it over into the computer. You know, it's you burn a CD. That's it. And you can do that in Linux as well.
Of course.
There's not much you can't do in Linux. You know that with Windows you can't do in Linux. So. I think that's the bottom. Yeah. That's the bottom line.
Or the other way around.
Or the other way around. It's really the same thing. Yeah, exactly. So we're in summarizing and finishing up this segment. I mean, we start talking about the dual boot.
Right. So just to summarize some of your options. So if you go to the Ubuntu website or the Linux Mint website, if you haven't used Linux before, those are the two that I would recommend. We'll have links in the show notes on those and links to instructions on how to install it as well. You can try Linux going to the website as we just did. You can create a CD with Linux on it and boot your computer from it. Which will not install it until you tell it to, but it will let you run an entire version of Linux right there from the CD if you want.
I really, really like that. I mean, because that truly, you're not burning a bridge. You can literally run Linux without installing one little thing on your computer. You can run it all off the CD. Of course, it will run slower. I mean, but still, you don't have to make that commitment to do it. But then after you've done that and you think that you like it, but you're still not ready to give up Windows yet. You want to try. You can install Linux in a. Would the next step would be what, a dual boot environment? So you could try one or the other.
Right. So there's a couple of ways you can dual boot. One would be if you're running Windows and you open the CD. You've created the CD drive, and you're looking at the contents of the CD from Windows.
Mm-hmm.
If it's Ubuntu, it will say Wubi or something like that, .exe. If it's Linux Mint, it will say Mint Windows Installer, .exe or something like that. Double-click on that. It will offer to install it as a Windows application. And you can uninstall it from the control panel, just as you would any other Windows application, if you decide you don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
What it does is it takes a little chunk of the free space on your computer's hard drive, and it installs itself on there. And to Windows, it looks just like an application. Of course, you can't run it from within Windows. What it'll do is it'll put something on the boot screen so that when you boot into your computer, instead of just automatically moving into Windows, you'll have a selection. Do you want to use Windows or do you want to use Linux Mint or Ubuntu? And then you can choose which operating system you want to use. And for all intents and purposes, your computer believes it's installed. It's really installed in kind of a virtual version of a hard drive, but it's there and it's working and it's fully functional. I wouldn't use it for an extended period of time, mm-hmm. extended meaning multiple years, but give yourself a week or a month or two to give it a try and really try it out, make sure it works with your hardware, and then you can go back and install it using the instructions on our website.
Okay. Now, when you install Linux as a dual boot mm-hmm. or in parallel with it, I mean, you are actually installing Linux, so you could keep it that way. I mean, there's no disadvantage to doing that other than the room that Windows will take up. I mean, but if you want to stay that way and you always feel, well, I may have to go back to Windows for something, but, you know, it's always there, but then you can always boot into Linux, that's a good way to go, too. Because Linux doesn't take that much room on your hard drive, does it?
No, it doesn't. It takes up less room than the equivalent version of Windows. Of course, Linux can read Windows drives, so you can actually open your Windows hard drive and look at the contents of it from within Linux. So if you've got word processor documents or presentations or pictures on your Windows hard drive, you can actually, from your boot into Linux, you can use the Linux software to edit those documents, edit those pictures, view the pictures, go onto the website and put them on Picasa or web or wherever you want them, just like you were using Windows.
All right.
Yeah, well, that works great.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was really – so there you go. That's step-by-step trying Linux, Larry's recommendation for you. You know, you should and of course, we have it all up in the show notes. You can try it for yourself and give it a shot. You really should. I mean, it's a terrific operating system and certainly worth your investigation. And, again, it's completely free. It's just amazing to me. All right. So when we come back – we're going to go some emails that I've collected over the past month. We're going to read some emails that are Linux-based. Larry's going to has a collection of them, and we're going to read them and answer their questions and consider their comments. We'll be right back after your local and national news. Stay tuned for another hour of Computer America.
You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK. Or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
And we continue on. It's our all-Linux show. It's all about Linux. Larry Bushy, our Computer America correspondent and Linux expert, continues on with us, the host and creator of the Going Linux podcast. So here's what we're going to do now in this hour. We're going to move into the next phase of the our Linux online show, and that is the email that we get over the month. Larry picks the ones that he wants to talk about and he thinks that would be of the most interest to listeners. To read on the air and answer. So let's start off with go all the way over to Israel. And Steve, who listens to you on in Israel, has an interesting email. So why don't you start with his?
Yeah, sure. So we have listeners from all over the world, of course. And I think this month, Steve's the only one who's said where he actually is. So Steve in Israel, thanks for listening. He thanks us for explaining my co-host Bill's final greeting on our show. Every show, Bill ends the show by saying 73. And
is that
in
like
last month's.
Is that like 42?
Kind of like that, except very different.
All right.
73 is an amateur radio or a ham radio greeting that is essentially so long, farewell, goodbye. That's how they end their transmissions on ham radio.
Now, what did it? Where does it come from? I mean, there must be something. 73. Does it actually spell? Is it cryptic? I mean, does it come up? Is there any reason? If you go to the seventh letter in the alphabet and the third, you know, it's like hi or something. No,
Or is No. It comes from the fact that originally, and I'm speaking from what I've learned from Bill, okay, since he's a ham radio operator and I'm not. So if I get any of this wrong, don't shoot me. Yeah. But according to Bill, 73 is a numeric code. And in the days when they used Morse code, typing long words and sentences took a long time.
Yeah.
And so they developed all these codes for commonly used phrases. 73 happens to be just the one they chose for farewell.
They picked it out of the air.
Yeah, I don't know where they got it from, for some reason, 73 is one they chose.
It's like 10-4. You know, it means okay. You know,
exactly, okay. And that came from similar sorts of backgrounds. Okay. I'm sure. Uh-huh. Bill says 88 is hugs and kisses, and he doesn't say that on the show very lightly.
Okay.
So anyway, back to Steve's email from Israel. Yeah, this part of the show is about you. Email. He says, "Hi guys, thanks for the explanation of 73. I always assumed that Bill added that to the end of the show as his trademark with some personal significance, like his birth year. If Bill was born in 73, he'd be 38 or 39 years old, which I'm guessing is about his real age. Yeah. Thanks for the show, Steve."
All right. Well, there you go.
Well, I can't speak for his real age because
it could have been 1873. Yeah,
maybe. So he's 138 years old. Yeah.
I did not know this until we started talking about ham radio and all this stuff, and you have corrupted me. Like as soon as you say, you know, what's 73? I'm like, oh, it's probably a ham radio code. I did not know this information before. Why do I know this? Something's happening. Yeah. I'm learning. This is bad.
You're learning exactly.
Well, and the reason that we talk about ham radio on a Linux show is because ham radio operators often use Linux to run their radios. Today's radios are not just tubes and amplifiers and very long antennas. These things have digital modes associated with them, and they can actually broadcast over the internet. And they can use various bands, radio bands, that include transmission over some things that you would think might be television or other things. But no, they're actually ham radio bands. And because there is a lot of Linux software to run the radios, to do the logging that's necessary, ham radio on Linux has become very, very popular. And in fact, I've said it on the show ad nauseum. There's even a ham radio related podcast specifically for podcasters using Linux or ham radio operators using Linux.
All right. Okay.
Well, it could be people who are still protecting the end of technology, and you know, ham radios will be the primary mode of communication between people. Yeah.
Well, you know what? You may joke about that, but think of the end of the world. You know, what's going to be left? Cockroaches and ham radio operators. I really think that, seriously, ham radio and amateur radio has a very serious place in today's world, and that is in emergencies, natural disasters like Hurricane Katrina. The ham radio operators were very instrumental in ensuring that help got to folks. And various national or natural emergencies or national disasters that happen. When the regular communication lines get tied up because everybody's trying to get on them, oftentimes it's ham radio that's the only thing that's available to get those communications through, and they can do it. They relay information from here to there and around the world if necessary to get the information where it needs to go.
Very, very cool. All right, let's go to Kareem. He had a comment, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kareem's a regular listener to the Going Linux podcast. He comments on a suggestion that we made to Paul on last month's Computer America episode for Linux. He says, "Hi, Larry, Tom, and Bill, the three of us who work on the Going Linux podcast. About Paul's email regarding FreshClam, the antivirus software, and permissions for using it. I made the comment on the last show
that for some reason
you need to run it as root or run it with administrator permissions.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me that the antivirus product on Linux is called Fresh Clam?
It's actually called Clam AV, and Fresh Clam is the way is the command you run to get the new antivirus definitions.
Oh my
That's
gosh.
How you update it. You get Fresh Clams.
Okay.
So it's like the clamshell is like the antivirus, and it keeps your Perl's information safe.
Oh God!
That's it. Nobody said.
Oh, the
Linux,
metaphor.
Linux
oh,
developers
geez.
Don't have a sense of humor.
I guess so. Okay, go ahead.
Warped though it may be.
Yes.
So, continuing with Kareem's email, you might have already received responses regarding it, but I figured it wouldn't hurt for me to submit a comment on it as well. I agree with your recommendation about running Fresh Clam with sudo, that's the command that allows you to run as an administrator, and a possible security issue with using sudo more frequently than necessary. And as you can imagine, running as a system administrator on your computer on a regular basis could open you up to the kind of infection that's plagued Windows for years, because Windows historically has run as an administrator, Windows users. With Linux, you don't. With the Mac, you don't. And in order to run things as an administrator, there are a few ways to do it. And on Ubuntu derivatives, sudo, the command sudo allows you to do that. Continuing with the email, I found that the sudo situation could be avoided by adding your user ID / account to the application's users group, since mm-hmm. most applications like web servers, database servers, and Clam AV in this case are likely to create a user and group to the application under which the application runs during installation.
Okay. All right. Well, why don't we continue this when we come back? Okay, we're up against the break. This is the Computer America Show. We'll continue on with Kareem's email right after this. Stay with us. We are reading an email from Kareem, who was making comments on suggestions made to Paul in last month's Computer America, and you were sort of in the middle of that, so why don't you continue, Larry?
Sure. So what Kareem is saying essentially is that instead of running a command that lets you run as an administrator, maybe you could switch a setup so that you can run this Fresh Clam, don't laugh, Fresh Clam command without having to be administrator. Just give it permissions. So he says applications like these application accounts usually have permissions to read and write the application data and log files. Sometimes the application group may only have read permissions. But since in most cases that group is not associated with any other applications or users, it is safe to give both read and write permissions and execute permissions as necessary. You can add your user ID to that group. This below approach could be used for any application. He's going to give us a few steps here. This may require a little trial and error, but it is very simple since file permission issues are usually immediately visible on the terminal, or if not, in some cases can be found in system logs. Before I read through his steps, he's going to give us some steps that we would use in a terminal, or what Windows would call the command line. Uh-huh. Now, the folks at Microsoft have made this command line thing seem very, very scary. With Linux, everything you do graphically runs a command on the command line in the background. So everything you do, and truth be told, Windows, although it doesn't quite work the same way, is running commands when you do things graphically, just mm-hmm. like the Mac is. So what you're doing when you run something in a terminal is you're bypassing all that graphical stuff and you're running stuff much more quickly and more efficiently. And so what he's doing here is giving us an approach for doing this using the command line.
Okay.
So he says, first, attempt to run the application, that is the Fresh Clam command, and see what file permissions what file has permission issues and note the file paths. So, in essence, figure out which file's the problem. Right. If multiple files are identified, note the directory paths so that you can find them. Then run the command ls-la and then the file path. What that really is, ls is like the Windows dir command.
Directory.
It gives you,
yeah,
directory. It gives you a list of files in that particular folder. So he says run that command to see what owner/group created the file and the permissions that are present on the file or folder. So running that command will give you that information. Step four, if the grouper permissions don't match owner permissions, you'll need to change the group permissions to the owner permissions. Depending on the application you need, either just read and write or even execute. Those are the three modes. So you can have the file be able to read or write or execute, which is essentially run as a command. Mm-hmm. And you use the command manchmod to find out how to do that. That is from the terminal. That gives you a help screen for the command chmod. That's chmod. Mm-hmm. Step five, add your user ID to that group according to the instructions you get. And number six, log out and re-log in. Repeat these steps until you've resolved all the file permission issues for the application in question. This approach is safer than running under sudo, since in rare occasions, if someone is remotely is able to access the application using an exploit, they will only have permissions as that of the account running the application, unlike sudo, which elevates the application's access level. Mm. This is also safer than giving all permissions to everyone, and it gives the permission codes there. We won't read those over the air because they don't mean anything to anybody. I hope these above steps will help Paul and others, other users hoping to avoid using sudo every time when attempting to update ClamAV definitions or doing similar maintenance operations for something like an antivirus software. Thanks, Kareem. And with that explanation, I think I wouldn't even bother running the antivirus software because you don't really need it with Linux. It just seems like so much hassle.
Well, people like to be safe, but I think this email is a perfect example of why people are kind of intimidated by Linux, and people assume, you know, if you run Linux, then you know all about computers. It's because you have to do a lot more – I guess you don't have to, because there are a lot of user friendly applications in Linux. You know, that Windows user, you know, if you told a Windows user that he had to do something like that, he'd be calling tech support immediately.
Yep, exactly. Well, and you know, let's face it, we're talking about running a program on Linux that is designed to protect Linux users from the problem that really is the most prevalent on Windows, so that they don't pass on viruses to their Windows-using friends, because those viruses really can't affect Linux anyway. So, you know, I'm not sure this is even necessary, quite frankly. And this also illustrates the fact that what you saw in the Ubuntu demo, with everything working so smoothly and beautifully and graphically, is the result of the stuff that's important for Linux that an average user would want to use, and the stuff that the average user would be interacting with. What we're talking about here is someone who needs to run antivirus for some reason, and the only reason at this point you would need to run antivirus on Linux is you're paranoid. You are a person who likes to tweak Linux, and or you run a server using Linux and you're running some email client on there and you want to put an antivirus on there just to prevent email from being used to propagate viruses.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break here and then we'll continue on. We'll come back with an email from Nico when we continue on. This is
Welcome back to the Computer America Show. It's not Wednesday night, so we don't have a winner. we're still doing emails. And despite what Craig mentioned before the break, the next email comes from Todd.
Yes, that's
and
right.
He mentioned that he has gone Linux not once, not twice, but five, count them, five times.
Wow.
Yeah, Todd's really gone overboard here. He says, "Hi, Larry, Tom, and Bill. Thanks for the show. If you ask my percent Linux, I'd have to report 500% because I have five Ubuntu boxes. I've even become accustomed to Unity in 12.04. Todd Land in Seattle, Washington. I lied. Todd also told us where he is. So thanks, Todd. And Unity is that interface we were using on the Ubuntu demo. How'd you like it, guys?"
That didn't seem too confusing. Like, was there a big kerfuffle about using Unity?
Yeah, when it first came out, mainly because it was different.
Oh, we can't have different. No, we can't have different.
Yeah, it was, you know, for somebody who's used a Mac, it may be more similar than different. And for somebody who's used Linux for a long time, it was very different, kind of like Windows 8 is different for Windows users, you know, and although it's not released yet, there are plenty of previews out there, and it's so different, people are giving it, even Patricia Reichel was giving it a little dissing on air here. So Unity was welcomed with the same dissing.
Oh, okay. This percent Linux, do you ask your listeners to kind of, you know, say what percentage of your computer usage is now Linux-based?
We do not. I think he may have picked that up from another listener who had written in and said that he was 100% Linux because he had one computer with Linux on it. And I think it's a one-upmanship here. I really think that's what it is. Or a five-upmanship.
Okay.
So, yeah. Nothing big, no. Moving on to the next email?
Yeah, is this a new... Yeah, okay. We forwarded from Chris.
Yes. So we did. We forwarded this message that we're reading from Chris to listener David because he's providing some help for David, as our listeners do from time to time. They help each other out, just like the guy with the antivirus thing, although sometimes the help is a little more confusing than the problem. Anyway, Chris writes, "Hey, Larry, Tom, and Bill, in your most recent listener feedback episode, episode 186, you got a letter from David." Actually, it was an email, but hey, letters still get mailed. From David asking, or at least saying in passing, about, among other things, programming in Borland Delphi on Linux. Oh. I don't do this type of programming, so I could be totally wrong with all this, but I Googled around a bit and found some information that David could look into. First, Borland Delphi is no longer Borland Delphi, but apparently is now Embarcadero Delphi.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, that makes all the difference right there. It also seems to be an environment for programming in a particular dialect of Pascal, another modern programming language, called Object Pascal by Wikipedia for those keeping track.
This confirms my statement that Linux was primarily, you know, for people who like to tinker, because this guy really likes to tinker. You know?
Yeah, he at least is doing his research here. Much more research than I did when I responded to this guy's email in the first place. Uh-huh. Continuing with Chris's email. "At one time, there was a version of Delphi for Linux called Kylix, but it is no more."
Thank God.
Yeah, on Linux, it looks like a piece of software called Free Pascal serves the role of cross-platform compiler for the language and seems to be one piece of what David is looking for. Noted alongside the Free Pascal compiler is the Lazarus IDE, well-named, a cross-platform integrated development environment, IDE, designed to provide a Delphi-like experience for web developers.
You know, what I really like
copied and pasted?
You know what I really like about Larry? He picks emails that are so broad that affects most everybody who, you know, can identify with them. And I see that He continues on with that with this one.
I am sorry. These were the only emails I had left in the bin.
Oh, God. All right, go ahead.
You know, if someone's asking the question, someone else has the exact same question.
Exactly right.
Okay.
Exactly
all right.
And this could be helpful to somebody who's been looking for that Borland Delphi replacement on Linux
for years. Right. Well.
Anyway, he says, since both of these are cross-platform, he can try them on Windows first. Oh, what a relief. Yeah. I know it's only one part of a very complicated question, I think, but I hope it helps. As always, great show, Chris. Sorry, Chris, for ripping on you, but this was just too funny.
You can see in the Linux community, no matter how obscure or random or, you know, in depth your question is, there's someone out there who can help you.
Or can go in even more in depth.
who can confuse you to no end, apparently.
Yes. So do you get the idea that these Linux developers are really, 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 really geeks? You know, they really are. And, you know, I guess I'm a geek too, but I am not a programmer like a lot of these guys are. And thank goodness they are, because there's no way I could keep Linux running without the help of these techno experts out there. Because I'm one of these tinkerers who tries to tinker not knowing what he's doing and gets into trouble. So oftentimes I'm looking for help from these guys too. Mm. Thank goodness they're out there.
That whole thing just reminded me of the scene from Batman, the new Batman. It's like, he's not the hero that this city needs. It's the hero that this city deserves, or something like that. I'm like, Chris is the geek that you don't need. He's the geek that the Linux community deserves.
Exactly. So we got a couple of shorter emails here.
All right.
Probably less complicated as well. So. Let's move on to John.
Right.
He says simply, hi, guys. No, he doesn't. He says, hey, guys.
Yes.
Love the show and all you do for us here in Cyberland. It can be scary.
Yeah, especially that last email.
We just learned that.
Right. Yes. Okay.
I've been listening for years since Ubuntu Edgy. Edgy is the code name for one of the very first versions of Ubuntu. So he's been listening a long time. And he says, I think, and Canopix. Canopix is another distribution of Linux, the first one that had a live CD.
Wow.
So that's going back a few years as well. Mm. Now I am a proud user of Ubuntu 12.04 in VirtualBox, which is a virtual machine, and even have CCSM, which is Desktop Special Effects, working perfectly. I do all surfing at Ubuntu and never have problems. Just another testimony and living your mantra, use Linux to get things done. Thanks.
There you go.
And virtual machines. We just recorded an episode on virtual machines, which will be coming out very shortly after this podcast does. And we have we talk about VirtualBox, which of course is from originally from Sun Microsystems. Maybe it was from somebody else before them, but now it's from Oracle. There's VMware, and I just learned that Parallels runs on Windows and Linux as well as a Mac. I didn't know that before.
Yes. Oh, yes, it does, and it allows you to run. Well, obviously on a Mac, it allows you to run Windows and it allows you to run Linux. Although I've always questioned why you'd want to do that, since there is a native version of Linux for the Mac. So you really don't have to run it in Parallels.
You don't have to, unless you just want to try it out.
Yeah, exactly. But I still think Parallels is best for what it's originally, which is to run Windows on a Mac computer.
You know? Oh, of course, yeah. And but hey, you know, you can use it.
You can use
it on Windows, and you can use it on Linux. Who knew?
Yeah, that's right.
You still have to fork over the money for it, or you can go with VirtualBox for free from Oracle.
It's $79 bucks, but I got to tell you, the $79 bucks for Parallels. Parallels is an outstanding program. I mean, it does some amazing things. So.
Yeah, and it's half the price of VMware, so there you go.
Yeah, especially when you can switch between modes. They have all these different modes that they have, where you can run it in a window or full screen, or you can run it concurrently, so you can't even tell which operating system you're in. You're just running the apps. You know, it's an amazing application utility, and you really and for $79, that's just unheard of. So
right. And speaking of virtual machines for Linux as well, I haven't used Parallels on Linux, but VirtualBox has those same seamless modes and things so that you can run Windows on Linux and be able to use it as you would expect to.
Okay, well, we got one more segment coming up. We'll have time, I think, to get Dan's email in, and then we'll continue on. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. Larry Bushy continues on with us. We'll be right back. Larry Bushy is here with us in this last segment. He is our Linux correspondent, Linux expert. And we've got one more email we want to read. And this one's from Dan, who runs not one, not two, but three operating systems on his one computer.
Yeah. So whereas one of our other listeners was five computers running Linux, this is five operating systems on one computer. Dan writes, I haven't heard anyone talk about Ultimate Edition, yet another distribution of Linux. Mm-hmm. I happened to stumble across it and found it to be a wonderful distro based on Ubuntu 12.04 long-term support, and picked it to be the primary operating system on my new machine. I run Ultimate Edition 3.4 x86 64 as my primary OS, Backtrack 5R3 as secondary, and Windows 7 as a stepchild. Again, all x86 64-bit. Regards, Dan. So he has three very different operating.
I'd never heard of the Ultimate Edition. Yeah.
No, Ultimate Edition is based on Ubuntu, of course, and I haven't looked into it in any depth, but it appears to have kind of like Linux Mint. It has some things set up that Ubuntu doesn't set up by default, and a few things set up a little differently, different applications. Somebody else's personalized version of Ubuntu, I think.
You think that's what it is? You think someone just took Ubuntu and just did it the way they want to, and said, "I'm going to make that a distro."
Well, yeah, I think a lot of these come out, start out that way, and then they become popular because other people like what they've done, and the more popular they become, the more mainstream they become. So, some of these start off as a personal project that becomes bigger than they ever thought, and they end up being a Linux maintainer overnight.
Yeah, exactly. And a Linux advocate as well,
Yes, because, yes, something like what happened to me many years ago.
So yeah, exactly. And that's what happens. I mean, because, you get started with it and you really like it. I mean, I've seen what happens with Ben's brother, Aaron. I mean, he uses Linux exclusively. He started off,
real quick, before you continue on with that, I believe Aaron has another title other than Ben's brother. Just saying, Dad.
Yeah.
There might be another connection you have with him.
You mean he's my son?
There you go.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You don't need to go through someone else to that connection.
He could be your mom's son.
Well, there you go. There's that, too.
But
I always thought he was adopted.
It's yes.
I've never accepted him in my heart.
Well, he does use Linux. So,
he does. He can't be all bad.
Yeah, there's something off about him.
He can't be all bad because he uses Linux. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's it.
But I remember.
Yeah.
I mean, because he used to be a Windows advocate, and I think what happened is that he something went wrong with his Windows.
He destroyed his Windows computer, and he's like, "Well, I need a new operating system, and I don't want to pay the money, so." Mm-hmm. Hey, I hear this Linux thing works out for people.
So he was sort of forced into it, but I think since then he could have gotten another copy of Windows, but he hasn't bothered. He really likes it. He uses it.
And a lot of people get started on Linux just that way. I mean, it's free, so there's no risk. So you may as well try it. I mean, if you have to reinstall an operating system, try one that's free. See if you like it. And if you do, nothing, you haven't spent any money. And if you don't, you haven't spent any money and you haven't lost anything. Away you go.
And also, if you don't like it for some reason, maybe you have try a different distro. Just don't throw Linux out. I mean, maybe the particular distribution that you decided to try – is not. Although you really should try one of these general distributions like Ubuntu or Linux Mint. You know, something that are designed.
Yeah. You know. Exactly, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, although I take some flack for recommending the beginner versions of Linux, Linux is Linux, and it's just as powerful whether it's got a nice, slick interface like Ubuntu does over top of the powerful, you know, engine that's below the slick interface. No.
Larry, just tell us what's coming up next for the Going Linux podcast. We've got less than a minute.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking on our next episode about virtual machines, and we're starting an introductory episode on that. So we'll get people started on how to virtualize their computing environment using Linux and virtual machines on Linux, which the research is of that episode is how I found out that Parallels runs on Linux.
There
Who
you
knew?
Go. And again, you can go to computeramerica.com and just go under the archives under Friends, and you'll see that we have a link there to the Going Linux podcast. We have a link there as well, or you can just go to the Going Linux podcast. That's probably the best way. That's the easiest way to do it. And
sure, goinglinux.com, or find us on iTunes or Stitcher or any of these other places.
Exactly. Hey, Larry, always a pleasure having you here on the show, and we will see you next month when we do another episode of All Linux in November.
You bet. Thanks once again.
All right, Larry, take care. Have a good evening. Good night.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.